We are a new unsettling force, and we are powerful. A new unsettling force, and we're here. A new unsettling force for liberation, and we've got nothing to lose but our chains. That's another of the Poor People's Campaign songs. Celebrating something new while drawing on the best of the historical tradition of resistance. I don't need to remind anyone that we are living during frightening and difficult times. In some ways, we truly are in a new situation. Devastating worldwide climate change is not a problem previous generations anticipated. Surviving that will require fundamental social change on all levels, and we risk running out of time. However, when it comes to most other problems, many in our country, indeed most people globally, have been experiencing them all along. Genocide and white supremacist violence are not new. Concentration camps and xenophobic rulers, imperial wars, whether fought with guns or with trade policies, are not new. Restrictions on democracy and civil liberties, attacks on gender and sexuality are not new. Greed and poverty are not new. All have been part of this country's history from the very beginning. If we are recognizing the magnitude of these problems more intensely, some of us perhaps for the first time, it is largely because we have access to social media or to movements and organizations, including Unitarian Universalism, that expose us to news many of us would not have gotten otherwise. And even if we do know the problems from direct experience, we might lack an accurate analysis of why we are suffering. Just as our social problems are mostly not new, neither is our resistance to them. And I find that to be a great source of resilience, especially now when older, more unifying ways of organizing are coming back in new forms. The revival of Martin Luther King's Poor People's Campaign, updated 50 years to fit our current cultural context, but fully grounded in King's vision, is a great example. So too is a lot of what is happening with organized labor right now, the movement to which I was most connected before starting my late life attempt at ministry. While these efforts recognize the importance of specific forms of oppression, they share the approach of class-based organizing across differences, recognizing that entangled at the roots of all of our social problems is that we are governed by a social system based on greed, not need. And our common interest in having our needs met gives us the basis to work together. In this current context, I must admit I'm actually feeling hopeful. And I'm not terribly fond of the word hope. I actually prefer the word faith. By definition, faith does not require evidence. And that's why it can be powerfully liberating, allowing us, for example, to act in the face of overwhelming scientific evidence predicting apocalyptic results from climate change. However, though my faith guides me as an activist and a minister to work for justice regardless of how dire the circumstances or unlikely the goal, I do admit a little positive evidence is more than welcome. And thankfully, that evidence is growing. Let's look first at labor. At their best, labor unions fight for the dignity of workers, measurable in practical terms of pay, benefits, hours, and safe working conditions, and also in pride, security, and community. I gained all of these as an active union member, and that gave me an unshakable faith in the innate worth and value of ordinary, flawed people with average abilities, myself included, faith in the creativity of people who are not rich, not all that well educated, not celebrities, not persons with unusual talents, nor necessarily even persons of great virtue. In response to a newspaper that published his obituary, the author Mark Twain once quipped, "Reports of my death are greatly exaggerated." Organized labor has been in a steep decline in this country for the last 40 years, and pundits, whether mourning or cheering, have been announcing greatly exaggerated reports of its death for most of my adult life. Yet, labor activism is reviving in the U.S., all over the country, despite those who claimed it could not. Whenever my faith in the official labor movement has lagged, and it has at times, I am reminded of the historical inevitability of resistance, despite flawed or stagnating institutions, often at those times when victory seems least possible. Let me cite a few examples of this emerging vitality. In the past, many labor leaders believed those who rely on gig employment or low-wage jobs like fast food service could not be organized. Gig workers are too atomized. The potential for high turnover in low-wage jobs prevents commitment and continuity. Yet, now we have Uber and Lyft drivers demonstrating and striking and actually winning concessions and legal protections. The fight for 15, aided by unions but not started by them, has proven the willingness of low-wage workers to fight for their needs and win, one city and state after another. Well-established unions are showing new signs of life thanks to militancy from below. Witness the ongoing wave of successful teachers' strikes, another just settled victoriously in Chicago. Many unions have already begun successful organizing of workers ignored in the past, such as the car wash workers who were organized in Los Angeles last year. Union activists of my generation used to write off youthful tech workers as would-be capitalists with no collective social conscience. I was very inspired a month ago by seeing dozens of young tech workers walking a picket line to support cafeteria workers in their office building who are being organized by the hotel and restaurant union. Lastly, I'd like to point out a growing strategy within labor called bargaining for the common good. The idea that unions should benefit not only their members, but also the people who use the products and services they create. Locally, this is best represented by the mental health clinicians at Kaiser, willing to go on strike to get a contract protecting the rights of their patients to services denied in practice, though promised in Kaiser insurance policies. And much of labor's new vitality is thanks to young workers, often young workers of color, inspired by other growing movements, in which it should be noted unions are increasingly engaged, bringing together the best of both identity and class-based organizing. When I see my original calling, inspiring a new generation, how can I not feel reinvigorated? Beyond workplace organizing, I am especially inspired by the new Poor People's Campaign. Under the leadership of the Reverend William Barber, it emerged from the Moral Monday movement, which has mobilized, among others, thousands of union workers to engage in civil disobedience for economic justice. The campaign is reviving the spiritual commitment and inclusive tactics of the civil rights movement, recognizing that over half our population is either living in poverty or very close to it, and even decently paid workers are only one accident, layoff, or climate disaster away. When I see the movement that most inspired me while I was growing up, now mobilizing a new generation, revitalizing older activists too, and bringing us together across differences supposed to be insurmountable, how can I not feel encouraged? So what can we, as Unitarian Universalists, absorb from these newly emerging developments? Here's what I think. First, to the extent we commit ourselves to social justice within and beyond our walls, our efforts can and do contribute to measurable positive results benefiting actual people. We will be most effective if we act humbly from our common ground and shared needs, recognizing that most of us are also vulnerable. Second, people fighting for justice within their own communities and workplaces appreciate solidarity and practical assistance. They could use whatever resources we or others can provide, but they don't need outside leadership, including from us. In fact, we need to learn from theirs. Third, and I think this is the most important lesson, if something needs to be done, we make no progress until we defy the evidence that it can't be done. When action succeeds, evidence of success inspires more effort. That's why you have a wave of teacher strikes, for example. And evidence of failure becomes a challenge to overcome, not a permanent condition. As Marge Piercy wrote, we must not be parlor generals or field deserters. The best gift we can offer now and for future generations, and it is more than good enough, is to haul in our places and move in a common rhythm. We've got nothing to lose but our chains. Thank you.